Welcome to the LA Dreaming Podcast, your guide to exploring Los Angeles. This is your host, Michelle, from ladreaming.com and la.dreaming on Instagram. For today's episode, we are discussing landmarks in Los Angeles County. Now, there are so many different types of landmarks all over the LA area, and we could easily have multiple episodes going over landmark after landmark that we highly recommend that you visit. So as a way to narrow it down, our guest Andy recommended that instead of talking about landmarks that are all across Los Angeles County, that we focus on a specific area. So for this episode, we are focusing on landmarks in the Palos Verdes Peninsula, and I have no doubt that you are going to be really excited by some of the locations that we are talking about in this episode. Before we get into our conversation with Andy, I just wanted to provide an update on some information regarding the Great Air Raid of 1942. This is an event that Andy and I talk about a little further on in the episode when we are talking about Fort MacArthur, and it was an event that was supposed to take place in February of 2023, and unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, they have had to cancel it for this year. I still wanted to keep the information about the event and the episode because I'm hoping that in other years it'll return because it sounds like an incredible event. But I did just want to do a disclaimer that unfortunately, in between the time when we recorded this episode and when it's airing, the event has been canceled. But definitely stay tuned because this sounds like an event that we won't want to miss. Well, one of my favorite ways to explore Los Angeles is visiting landmarks. So I was blessed to discover the SoCal Landmarks Project. And today for this show, we're going to be talking about some very exciting landmarks in Los Angeles County. And for our guest, we are joined by the project manager for the SoCal Landmarks Project, Andy. So welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you here. And as we get started, would you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for inviting me to talk about our project and some of the SoCal landmarks we have and plan to document. There's really nothing special about me. I grew up in Illinois. Our family moved west when I was in seventh grade, and I've never considered living anywhere else since. I'm a linguist by education and a programmer by profession. History and photography are my passions, and I'm very lucky that my wife shares the former and tolerates the latter. So we enjoy going places, discovering new things, and sharing what we find.
Well, I am so thrilled that you do share, because I have saved so many wonderful places to visit just by following this project. So it has been such a blessing for me, and I know a blessing for so many other people who also love history. So this is just so exciting for me to get to talk to you.
Thank you.
And I would love to know how you got started with the SoCal Landmarks Project.
Well, I started dabbling in photography back in high school. Didn't really get serious about it until I bought a DSLR back in 2006. That led me to joining the Photographic Society of Orange County. And in 2014, one of the stalwarts of the club, John Baer, organized a club project called A Slice of Orange, for which I provided tech assistance, managing the website and stuff, and in addition to contributing images. I got the project bug from that and organized another project in 2017, to which Al Russell, another pillar of the club, contributed quite a bit. After that project folded, I approached both John and Al about putting together another project to play to our mutual interests. And SoCal Landmarks launched on February 1st, 2020, right into the teeth of the pandemic. And as they say, the rest is history.
Well, again, I have just been so excited to follow along with the journey. Every single time I see some of the photos, I am just always blown away and so inspired. And so again, I'm just so thankful that this has helped me discover different areas of Southern California with a new perspective. And I'm excited to keep following along and see what gets added to it. But for our conversation today, I am especially excited to get to talk to you about some amazing landmarks in Los Angeles County, some of which I've been to. Other ones are on my list to visit, so I am just so excited. And let's jump right in and talk about the iconic Wayfarers Chapel.
Okay, Wayfarers Chapel is out on the coast, south end of Palos Verdes Peninsula, and it's a glorious place. I think actually you mentioned you were married there in our correspondence. Wayfarers Chapel began as the dream of Elizabeth Schellenberg. She was a member of the Swedenborgian Church, who lived on the peninsula in the 20s. Church was her memorial to Emanuel Swedenborg, who was a 18th century Swedish Christian theologian, scientist, philosopher, and mystic, whose writings inspired the new church movement, the Swedenborgian Church. The chapel was designed by Lloyd Wright, who's the son of Frank Lloyd Wright, in the late 40s, and the chapel was completed in 1951. The chapel is unusual for Lloyd Wright's designs because he was really into concrete, but the chapel is just this wonderful structure, this multifaceted structure of glass and wood, and it's nestled in this grove of redwoods that just makes it almost magical to be there.
Oh, I think it is one of the most magical places in Southern California. And you're right, I did get married there. So I actually discovered it for the first time because it was used in a TV series that I was watching in high school called The OC. So some of the characters got married there. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, okay, once I move back to California, I absolutely have to go there. And so I visited for the first time, I think in 2018. And it just took my breath away. I think it is so incredibly gorgeous. And I still can't believe that I was lucky enough to get married there because it's just such a special place.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
And I think one of the other things I love about it so much is not only does it feel like you're transported to another area with the redwood trees and it just feels so spectacular, but then also having such an amazing view of the ocean. I think it is just such a peaceful and just wonderful place to visit.
Yeah, we went there on a weekday and, you know, there weren't that many people around and it was nice just to sit and enjoy the view and wander around the grounds. It was great.
Oh, yes. I just cannot recommend it enough for people to go there. And I think especially for people who do really enjoy architecture, it's an extra special place to visit, but I can't imagine anybody going there and not enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely.
So I feel like it's a really great place to start out a day trip to that area. And then it's so easy just to get on Pacific Coast Highway and go down towards San Pedro, where I feel like the bulk of the rest of the places that we're going to talk about are. And I have not been to Point Fermin Lighthouse in such a long time. But I have been there, and to me, it was just another spot that just felt so special. And I think that's why I enjoy the landmarks so much, because they all have something so special and unique about them.
Now, the Point Fermin Lighthouse is in the middle, Point Fermin Park. it was built in 1874. It was the first navigational light into San Pedro Bay that now we call LA Harbor. It's really a cool structure. It's built in what they call a stick Victorian style, which is because it's got all these, it's made out of narrow pieces of wood rather than great big broad planks or whatever. There are only six of them built in the period, and Point Fermin's one of three that's still surviving. The cool thing I think about the lighthouse is that the first lighthouse keepers were two sisters, Mary and Ella Smith. The lighthouse has been maintained locally as a historic place. You can go in and you can tour the house. It hasn't been an active lighthouse since they blacked out the whole coast after Pearl Harbor in 1941. But you take the tour and go up into the lighthouse. You actually get to go all the way up to where the light was. And the view there is just spectacular.
Okay, I absolutely have to go back because when I went, I don't think it was open that day. So I didn't get to go on the inside. I was just admiring from the outside. But that sounds really unique and fun to get to go up to the top where the light was.
Yeah, they've got one of the lenses from the light further down in the house on exhibit. But going up there and getting that view is makes it all worth it. It's a real narrow, twisty staircase, but it's definitely quite a thing.
Oh, that just sounds spectacular. And just moving a little further down, there is the incredible Korean Bell of Friendship. And I'm just so excited by all these places. They are all just so cool to me. So I feel like every single time I'm going to say how excited I am.
Yeah, I get it. I remember the first time I went out to Point Furman. I looked up on the hill and I saw the Korean Bell up there. And I was going, what is that? And I didn't have time at that time to go check it out. But when I got up there, I was just totally blown away. It's sitting up on a knoll just actually above the Point Furman Park. The bell was donated to the people of Los Angeles for the bicentennial in 1976 by the people of the Republic of Korea. It's quite the bell itself is really amazing. It weighs 17 tons. It's 12 feet tall and it has a diameter of 7.5 feet. I thought it was kind of cool that it's made of copper and tin with gold, nickel, lead, and phosphorus added for tone quality. They don't ring it that often, but it must sound pretty good. The pagoda that it's set in is mostly stone, a lot of carved wood. And it was constructed by 30 craftsmen that they flew in from Korea, especially to create the pagoda and the setting for the bell.
I think it is such a stunning spot. And then, of course, the view with the ocean behind it, it just feels so magical. And I think especially because of where it's located, it's such a great spot for a picnic too. And just what an incredible view with the bell and then the ocean behind. I think that is absolutely one of my favorite spots in the San Pedro area.
Yeah, I just love all the carvings in the pagoda itself and the way they've painted it. It's so colorful. It's just such an incredible piece of work. And yeah, it's a great spot to go for the views and take some time.
And I would love to try to arrange it in the future to try to go around a time or on a day where they might be ringing the bell, because I have gone a few times, but I've never got to actually hear the bell. And I think that would also just make the experience really unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that they've done it on 4th of July, since it's kind of, it's sort of a bicentennial type of thing. But I haven't seen anything lately about them ringing it. But yeah, I agree. It'd be pretty amazing.
And then one of the things that I've driven past this several times, but I've never actually stopped. So it's on my to-do list. And that is the battleship USS Iowa.
Now, the Iowa is an 1,887-foot long Iowa-class battleship. It was launched from New York Naval Yard in August of 1942. It was the lead ship of its class, the last lead ship of any U.S. battleship class. A lead ship is sort of the model, the prototype for the class. And it was the only Iowa-class ship to serve in the Atlantic during World War II. It also served in the Pacific and during both World War II and the Korean conflict. The cool thing about the Iowa is that it carried President Roosevelt on the first leg to his journey to the Tehran Conference in 1943, where he met with Joseph Stalin and Winston Churchill. And I'm sure you've seen the famous picture of those three gents sitting together.
Oh, Oh, yes. Oh, wow.
The ship was decommissioned in 1990 and berthed in San Pedro. They do offer tours. It's kind of neat. You get to go wander around the ship and actually get up close to the big guns and everything. The tours and exhibits focus on telling the story of the Iowa, the LA waterfront, and the Surface Navy. And it took me a little bit to figure out Surface Navy, but basically there's the underwater Navy and there's the in-the-air Navy and there's these on the surface of the water Navy, and that's what they focus on in their tour.
Oh, that sounds so incredible. And I love how much history we just have at our fingertips in Southern California. It is, we are very spoiled.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a few other places here, but when you consider that, you know, you've got Wayfarers, that is this incredible architectural piece, and then you've got Point Furman, which is this incredible historic piece, and then you've got the battleship Iowa, and the other things that we're going to talk about, it's really a great way to, you know, spend a day or more.
Well, and I love too that with all the variety of these different landmarks as well, there's really something for everybody, I think, regardless of what your interest is, because there is just such a variety. And I feel like they all tie together in the sense that they all have something special and historic about them, but I feel like they're all so unique at the same time.
Oh, I agree.
And then another spot that I am super excited for us to talk about, and I actually got to see a movie there this last October, and I thought it was such a spectacular experience, and that is the Warner Grand Theater.
Yeah, it's the Warner Grand Theater was one of three theaters that the Warner Brothers built in Los Angeles area. There actually were brothers, the Warner Brothers, and actually they started out as movie promoters. They acquired their first theater in 1903. They didn't start producing films until 1913 and didn't actually become Warner Brothers Pictures until 1923. But they eventually got into building theaters like a lot of other producers and promoters. And the Warner Grand Theater opened in 1931, which was actually kind of late in the period of movie palaces. And when you consider that Sid Grauman opened up his first theater in 1918, the Million Dollar Theater, and shortly followed by the Chinese and Egyptian. So Warner Theater is still considered a movie palace. It's kind of an Art Deco modern style, what they dubbed as a neighborhood picture palace.
I think it's really one of these spots that just transports you back in time when you go there, because it just feels filled with history.
Got to quote the city of San Pedro. They consider it a community landmark and an anchor of the San Pedro Arts District. And you know, it kept it up, and it's used not only for films, but there's concerts and youth performances and that type of thing. So the city really loves it, and it's well taken care of and a very popular venue.
And I have actually seen it pop up on screen a few times as a filming location. So I always get excited anytime I see it in a production that I'm watching.
Yeah, I find an impressive list of people who have either filmed or performed there, if you'd like to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the list is the Ramones, Jackson Brown, Leonardo DiCaprio, Angela Bassett, Ben Affleck, Steve Martin, George Carlin, Madonna, Dennis Rodman, and the Goo Goo Dolls. I mean, you want to talk about a diverse list of personalities.
Wow, that is incredible. Such a variety of talent, and I feel like a special connection that I had that made me extra excited to get to go there is I used to work as a tour guide at Warner Brothers, and I would do a tour that focused on the classics and the early years of the studio. And so I would talk a little bit about when they had the Warner Brothers Theater. And so then when I discovered that the Warner Grand Theater was still around in San Pedro, I got so excited and was so interested about getting to go and have an experience there. So I joined their email list so that way I could always find out whenever they're having special events. And so I was so excited when I finally got to go and have an experience there.
Mm-hmm.
And then another spot that I have not discovered yet, I've heard about it, but I have not gone to explore. So I'm very excited to talk to you about it. Is the sunken city.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's kind of like an underground landmark, really. It's out on Point Point Furman, and basically Point, you know, we already discussed about the fabulous views in that area, and there was a housing development that was built between Point Furman Park and the actual harbor entrance. And in 1929, a gradual landslide started. It started eroding, you know, the ground started eroding out on from underneath and off into the ocean. And basically, the housing development of about 5 acres of land started sliding off into the ocean. But it was so slow that they managed to save most of the houses. But big, huge chunks of streets and sidewalks are still out there on the edge of where the slide ended. And I'm not going to say that you can get out there, but if you can see it through fences from various vantage points. And you can see that people have gone out there. There's a lot of graffiti on the rocks or the pavements and such. So, the city has tried to keep it close because it's unstable. And so it's kind of one of those open secret destinations where I'm not going to recommend going out there, but that's just my recommendation.
Yeah, I do see it pop up on my social media every now and then. And so I always see these vibrant photos with all the graffiti. But yes, I kind of have mixed feelings about it because there is a part of me that wants to explore, but I also know that it's not recommended or encouraged. So I might just admire through a hole in the fence.
Yeah. I had read a while ago that the city of Los Angeles had actually started doing some ground surveys out there to try and determine if it had become more stable so that they could open it up. But I haven't found anything as a follow-up to that. So we'll see.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be amazing if they could open it up. So fingers crossed. And then a spot that I don't actually remember if I had even heard about this before. So this is going to be really exciting for me to learn about this. The Fort MacArthur. I'm very curious about that.
Well, actually, I was kind of surprised. I've gone out to Fort MacArthur quite a few times because they hosted reenactment events, military reenactments, and that type of thing that I've been to a couple of times as a event photographer. It turned out that the fort itself actually was created by an executive order back in 1888, and the government basically just took over that hilltop with the idea that they were going to build a fort up there and put in gun placements basically to guard the harbor. And they actually didn't start building the gun emplacements until 1917. They put in the big guns, or they call them batteries. But by the end of World War II, most of the large guns had already been removed, and the last one was decommissioned in 1948. But Battery Osgood Farley, one of the biggest ones, has a rather large underground structure to it, is now a museum. You can go and see all sorts of memorabilia and information about the history of the fort. There actually is a number of buildings up on a hilltop behind it, the barracks and that type of thing. And oddly enough, the only government presence there is now the Air Force. So, you know, go figure. It was an army installation. It belongs to the Air Force. It is kind of unknown in that basically it's all buried in the ground. It was made not to be obvious. So it's not something you just see driving by.
And then I'm curious about the reenactment. What is that experience like going to that?
Well, they had several different events, but now they've kind of cut back to one single event. And actually, it's coming up on February 28th. It's called the Great Air Raid of 1942. And what that is there's an old story about there actually was a flight of Japanese airplanes that did a buzz over back in 1942. And this event that they hold, they bring in a small orchestra, and everybody pretty much comes out in World War II era dress. There's a big dance, and it's a lot of fun. But at the end of the evening, all of a sudden the air raid sirens start up, the lights go out, the searchlights go on, and they've got pilots that fly overhead, and they actually have two functioning guns there that they fire off some shots. So it's kind of a reenactment of the whole great air raid.
Wow. Okay. That is even more incredible than what I was thinking. So that sounds like a must do, I think.
Yeah. It's a little pricey, maybe at $40, but it's just a gas. It's really such an incredible event.
And it really just sounds like a one of a kind event too, because I don't think I've ever heard of something similar. And I just love having the experiences that you wouldn't necessarily get somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely one of those.
And then as we're kind of planning out this day in this area, of course, there's going to be a lot of driving around. And so I'm really excited to discuss some of the bridges that people could go over during their visit.
Yeah, there's basically two bridges that, two historic bridges that you could take. I mean, there's other ways to get there, but you could take basically from Long Beach side. The Vincent Thomas Bridge is 1500 foot long suspension bridge, and the towers go up 365 feet, and I'll be honest, I'm a little leery about heights, and so driving over the Thomas Vincent Bridge is kind of a challenge to me. Vincent Thomas Bridge is kind of a challenge. The other one actually is a little closer. The Vincent Thomas ends up in over in San Pedro. Actually, you have to go through Terminal Island, and there's another bridge that will put you into Long Beach. And up until recently, it was the Gerald Desmond Bridge, but they've replaced that now with a new suspension bridge that opened up in October 5th. And the name of it, which the Long Beach International Gateway, was chosen by a public survey. So it's like the people of Long Beach said, this is what we want our bridge named. Which I thought was really cool.
Oh, I love that so much. And I live in Long Beach at the moment. So when I do go up to those areas, I'm blessed to get to go on the bridges. And I get a little nervous, but it just always makes me feel like I'm having such a special and fun experience. So even though they make me a little nervous, I do have a lot of fun mm-hmm. getting to go over them.
Oh, I get it.
Well, I know for our conversation, we primarily focused on some Los Angeles County landmarks, all in a specific area. But I know that the SoCal Landmarks Project covers Southern California as a whole. And so I'm very curious to see what other SoCal landmarks you might especially recommend that people go out and discover.
Oh my. Well, it kind of carrying through on our theme here of, day trips. I just kind of focused on two areas. Just last week, my wife and I went up to Santa Barbara for a two-night getaway, and we spent a whole day visiting sites that were like no more than 5 miles from our hotel near the marina. And we focused mainly on the State Street area because there are so many sites in there within about two blocks of State Street, one side or the other. That bridge the city's history from the first residence, the Hill Carrillo Adobe, to the post office, which is it's an incredible building because it's a strange mashup of Mission Revival style and Art Deco. Just really an impressive building, to the Libero Theater. But if you are going to go up there, I'd definitely suggest checking out the Santa Barbara Cemetery, which is over on the Santa Barbara Montecito boundary. It's not exactly Hollywood Forever, but it's pretty cool wandering around there. There's some interesting crypts and such, and just there. If you're into going to cemeteries, it's good stop. The other area that I'd like to explore more is Riverside. There's just so much history in the downtown area. Obviously, the Mission Inn is a big deal there, and it's certainly worth the time to walk all the way around it and through it if you can. But if you wander around about a 4-block radius of the Mission Inn, you see pieces of the city's history, like the small China pavilion near the library, to the Harada House, which makes an important statement about the Japanese internment during World War II. The Riverside Art Museum was designed by Julia Morgan, who later went on to, or maybe at the same time, designed the Herald Examiner building and eventually Hearst Castle, to the incredible Grand County Courthouse. And a little further away, there's an area of incredible Victorian style mansions.
Well, those just sound like some fabulous itineraries. I hope this has given people a lot of inspiration on exploring some of the incredible landmarks that we have all over Southern California. And I'm curious what recommendations you might have for people who want to get involved with helping to preserve and keep these special places alive and open.
Well, I've got three. First of all, go visit them. A lot of the smaller homes and sites and such are only open on a limited basis because members of a local historical society or friends of an area are volunteering their time, and so their time is limited. But their knowledge is incredible. Because they are so dedicated to keeping it preserved. I suggest if they offer a tour, take it. And if they ask for a donation, do what you can to help them out. Second, see if there's a historical society in your area. Chances are pretty good there's little ones, big ones, all sorts. I've discovered that most communities have some sort of small historical society somewhere. But you know, there are larger ones like LA Conservancy and Preserve Orange County that are countywide or more. Contact them, ask them what you can do to help, or maybe make a donation to them. And in a lot of cases, they offer tours, and take those tours because you're going to get quite an education from these people that are so dedicated to the preservation. And third, send emails to county and city officials considering historical designations of sites to express your support. I particularly have taken to keeping my eye on the LA City Council schedule, and I send a lot of emails to them when they're considering granting historic cultural monument status to sites. Again, it's a government type of thing, so it can be kind of tricky to find out when and where, but if you follow organizations like the Art Deco Society of Los Angeles, Save Our Heritage Organization in San Diego, or Long Beach Heritage, they're very helpful in making sure people are aware of what's going on and what they can do to help.
Well, thank you so much. That is such an incredible amount of important information about how we can get involved and help keep these places alive and for the next generations to experience and discover as well. And I would also love for you to share how people can get involved with the SoCal Landmarks Project and how they can support the amazing work that you're doing.
Well, thanks. Our home is our website. At SoCalLandmarks.com. And most of our efforts, our documentation is posted on our website. And then from there, we share out each edition out on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, and LinkedIn. But not necessarily every image goes out on social media. So you know, if you see something out there, you know the drill. Follow us and click on over to the website. We've got a YouTube channel too, but I'm afraid we haven't been able to give that as much attention as we'd like. We're not an official organization, a nonprofit, or a business or anything. We don't sell anything, well, at least not yet. But we do have a page out on Patreon, and there's links to that on the website.
Well, thank you so much. This has been so incredible, and again, your account and the project, it has been such a source of inspiration to me, and you've encouraged me to discover so many amazing landmarks. And I feel like this, in this conversation, you're encouraging so many other people, and I just cannot thank you enough for the work that you're doing with the project and for joining us and sharing your expertise on the show today.
Well, thanks again for letting me discuss the project, and I appreciate your appreciation, and I hope everybody that's listening to this will go out and enjoy some landmarks themselves.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the LA Dreaming Podcast. If you'd like more information on what we discussed, please head to ladreaming.com or connect with me on Instagram at la.dreaming.